This is the You Can Learn Chinese podcast, part of the Seneca Network from the China Project. For everyone who's trying to learn Chinese or reaching for the next level, you came to the right place. I'm your host, Jared Turner, co-founder of the Manner Companion Graded Reader Series, longtime resident of China, and I don't procrastinate. I just delegate tasks to my future self. My co-host is John Pazin, co-founder of Manner Companion, founder of All Set Learning, the Chinese grammar wiki, Sinospice.com, and when his professor told him he was failing his ethics class, he slid $20 across the table and asked, "What about now?" If you feel like you have a different personality in Chinese, then you're not alone. John and I will talk about this fascinating phenomenon, including much of the research that has been done about how we act and feel when speaking a second language. Guest interview is with Taha Schlibeck from Libya, who left his stable job to learn Chinese and seek a new start. Let's get to it. Hey guys, this is Jared Turner, coming at you from Utah in the United States.
Hey there, I'm John Pazdan, based in Shanghai, China. How's everybody doing?
Hey, to all our listeners out there, just a real quick request. If you know someone who could benefit from this podcast, as you have, we'd appreciate if you take some time and share this podcast with them. It helps us to just reach more people and just create a bigger benefit out there in the language learning community.
Yes, and we would appreciate it.
Well, John, do you ever not feel like yourself?
Sure, all the time.
Well, that's great, because we're going to talk a little bit about that today. We're going to talk about having like a different personality or feeling like a different person when you are speaking another language, in this case, specifically Chinese. There are a number of studies in this area, and specifically there's one stat that kind of jumped out at me when we were preparing for this episode, is that we found that in general about two-thirds of bilingual people felt that they had like a different personality or a different persona, if you will, different behavior when they spoke a second language.
Yeah, let's break this down a little bit, because you might be thinking, oh yeah, when I speak Chinese, I sound like a baby, or I sound like a toddler, or something like that. But we're talking about, you know, even after you pass that point, you know, you're intermediate, you're a bit more conversational, getting just a little bit fluent. Like even after that point, you might still feel like you're not the same person and the people you're talking to aren't meeting the real you, because you can't be the real you in a foreign language.
That's right. Now, granted, you know, even when you may still feel like you speak like a baby or a toddler, years later, but there is some really interesting studies and research that's gone into this. And so I think, yeah, let's delve into this.
All right. So what do you got?
Well, there is a surprisingly large amount of research in this area, so it was a little bit of a challenge, I think, to pare all of this down. But I think we're gonna pick out some of the best points here and talk about them. So, first off, there was one study here that found that speaking a foreign language seems to cause a change in self-perception. So, what does that mean? That means like actually how you're perceiving yourself when you're speaking that language. And there's a lot of factors that seem to go into this, but it's a little bit about like how your attitudes towards the culture are, your own perception of what your language skills are, and a little bit of the context that you're put in.
Right. You mean just I can speak Chinese now, so I'm cooler now? That kind of thing?
Quite possibly. But I think one of the points that came out in the study was that it also depended a little bit how familiar you are with the culture. So just think about this. Like, okay, maybe you've studied, you know, you're studying Chinese, but maybe you've had, you know, haven't had the time or opportunity to go to China, or you're just maybe very disconnected with actual cultural elements. You're going to have a bit of a different experience, like if you are very familiar with like those cultural aspects versus if you're not. And your personality, or really kind of how you're behaving in that situation, is going to be a little bit different in both scenarios. So, you know, it's a little bit of like kind of like, hey, what's that cultural background understanding you have when you're heading into those scenarios, into those type of situations?
Yeah, okay, I could see that. Like I remember when my parents visited China for the first time after I'd been here for a few years, and I could just like show them around and translate for them, and I could understand what people are saying and explain to them what was going on, and it kind of blew their minds. So when you have a couple of experiences like that, it also starts to affect how you see yourself, right?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So there's a lot of those little things that kind of impact you. But I think, we can definitely jump down the rabbit hole on a bunch of these studies, but I thought one thing was kind of bringing out here was a list of what kind of differences do people experience when they are speaking a second language.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, right? Because on the one hand, maybe some people are giving you this feedback like, wow, you speak Chinese. It's so crazy. It's so awesome. And at the same time, you're speaking Chinese and talking to Chinese people, and then maybe you're feeling really dumb because you can't say all the things you want to say. So when both this positive and this negative, you know, emotional reinforcement is hitting you, what is the net result, right?
Absolutely. So here we go. Here's a list of these things. So first thing is that you might find that your confidence might increase or decrease, and that's going to largely depend upon how comfortable you are speaking the language.
Or how nice the people you're talking to are, right?
That's true. So I think, John, how did that work out for you when you started learning Chinese? Did you feel like you had more or less confidence? Did you feel like you had more or less confidence?
Yeah, I think more, because people were so nice and so encouraging. And so I just, you know, kept doing it, kept getting more positive feedback, and it just made a positive feedback loop, right?
Yeah, I think me too. You know, I don't know, I guess I'm a pretty outgoing guy anyway, but yeah, I don't know. I wasn't like afraid to use my Chinese, funny enough. Something else that you might find is that your reaction to the same situations in different languages will be different. So, for example, if someone asks you in Chinese how much money you make versus asks you that question in English, I feel like I definitely do react a little bit, or would react a little bit differently. An English setting is kind of like, why are you asking me that? Why are you kind of nosy about that? But, you know, someone asks me in the Chinese, I'm like, I'll just, you know, give them a non-answer or whatever.
So you mean you're just following the cultural norms better because you're speaking the language?
Yeah, I guess so. That's definitely one aspect.
Yeah, like one thing I've found is that over time, there are certain things that used to really annoy me, but now that I've been in China long enough, it just doesn't really faze me because I just get that, you know, it's not a big deal. It's just something that happens here, people say, and I've kind of learned to be more tolerant about some things. And so some studies even show that opinions will change in a language. I'm not quite sure which opinions.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure either, but, you know, I guess think for yourself, fellow listener. You know, have you ever had an opinion that's maybe been a little bit different when you're speaking Chinese? Maybe about the same thing, right? But how you're expressing yourself, or maybe, you know, what you're saying your opinion is in Chinese could be different.
So is your personality different, or are you just lying because you're interacting in another, cultural environment?
That's a good question. I'm not entirely sure, but it's on this list. So hey, it's looks like they found this to be true in some instances. They also find that your mannerisms could be different. Your perceptions and interpretations of things will be different when you're speaking Chinese. Obviously, this makes a lot of sense. Your body language can be really altered because of the change in language. You know, it's commonly found that we oftentimes kind of mirror people a little bit, like, how they speak or how their body language is. So, you know, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I've known some people that are like really fluent speakers of Chinese, and they're really good at mimicking. So they mimic accents, they mimic body language, they mimic posture, and they can, you know, come across as super authentic as a result.
Another thing they find is that the intensity of your personality can change with the language you're speaking. So, for example, some people might be real serious, you know, in their native tongue, but when they're speaking their foreign language, they're a lot more fun, or maybe, you know, a little bit more, outgoing in that respect, or just a difference in intensity. It's interesting.
So, Jared, you become less intense in Chinese?
You know, John, I'm not entirely sure now that I think about it. Maybe sometimes a little more intense. But this leads us into the next study I came across here. This was some research that came out of some academics in South America and in a few countries there. But what they found was that people in their second language, they tend to be more utilitarian.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense. Like you want to be able to say something, so you learn the language you need in order to say it, in order to get something, in order to solve a problem. And so you're not just sitting around talking about philosophy and reciting poetry. You're getting stuff done. So if that's utilitarian, why not, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, what was interesting that this came across as well in like moral dilemmas. They found that in a second language, people tend to be less emotionally affected. So there was less emotional response elicited by that foreign language, and they gave less credence, or, you know, there was less impact of emotional concerns or circumstances, and that the foreign language actually kind of created a bit of more of that emotional distance. So it's, you know, to a degree, or maybe a little more Machiavellian, if you will, when we're speaking second languages. But, you know, I think it's something I definitely could experience, and I understand that when I started learning Chinese. Like you said, John, it's like I'm just trying to get stuff done. I'm just trying to communicate, trying to live life. And so I don't have time to deal with all these, you know, emotional or whatever, these kind of, you know, circumstances, political issues, whatever it might be. I just need to do what I need to do.
Now, that really makes a lot of sense to me, because I've also had the experience, like when I was just starting to get more fluent in Chinese in my early years, where I felt like it didn't really feel real. Like I was talking to people and they were talking to me and we were having all these conversations, and I was just like, man, I'm talking in Chinese. Is this real? And it even kind of got to this point where I could kind of intentionally change my personality because it didn't feel real. It felt like an alternate version of me. And if I'm an alternate version, then might as well make it a different version, which, you know, can maybe do crazier stuff, or, you know, talk to strangers and have conversations that I might not have otherwise.
Yeah, definitely. I can definitely relate with that as well, because, yeah, it's like that. I think it's to a degree, it's like that Chinese speaking world and the English speaking world, you know, for my frame of reference, are not really likely to overlap, right? So it's a little bit, it's not quite the degree of having like a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, you know, split personality, which, quick plug for Jekyll and Hyde, our Mandarin Companion level 2 graded reader.
Yeah, it's kind of like that classic trope that you see on like TV dramas or whatever. Like there's this guy with his girlfriend and he's a nice guy, but then he hangs out with his high school friends and he's a jerk. And she's like, why do you always act like that when you're with your high school friends, you know? And it's just this, you know, you're with different groups, different contexts, your personality does kind of change. And so why not even more so when you're speaking a foreign language, especially in a foreign land, right?
Definitely. And this brings up one of the other aspects that's relating to this whole phenomenon. And this has to do with the level of proficiency that you have in your target language, and in this case, Chinese. So, John, I guess here's the question for you. How do you feel your Chinese personality has changed from when you first started learning Chinese to the stage where you're at now, where you're using Chinese pretty much every day in your daily life?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the biggest changes I've experienced over the years, and this took quite a few years, was feeling like I could actually be kind of funny in Chinese, because I feel like I'm kind of funny in English when I'm relaxed and talking to friends. Like I feel like I'm funniest when I'm talking with my family members, because I'm the most relaxed, I'm the most at ease. And I feel like I'm pretty funny with my friends. With strangers, maybe not so much, but with Chinese, for the longest time, I would try to be funny and everything would fall flat. Like, you're sarcastic, they don't get it. You try to make a joke, that you're just confusing people. And for a while, I thought maybe, you know, humor doesn't work in Chinese. We actually have a whole other podcast about this, right? But eventually I realized that, you know, it was just me. I wasn't good at being humorous in Chinese. And eventually I kind of got it. And it wasn't until I could, you know, be somewhat, you know, slightly funny in Chinese in my own little way that I started to feel more like myself in Chinese, I think.
Well, that's an interesting point of reference right there. You know, I think for me, I definitely have experienced this, I think as we were talking about earlier, this utilitarian aspect of speaking a second language. But as my level of proficiency increased and I was able to make more connections and deeper relationships with other Chinese-speaking people, that whole emotional aspect, if you will, became, I guess, more accessible and more influential on me as a person. So to me, it almost seems like, yeah, it just like you know, you personality, you would say, might come out or, you know, mature as you grow up from a child to an adult. I feel like in a similar way, my personality has also matured in Chinese. That I've been able, as my proficiencies increase, I've simply been able to do more, connect with more people, and just deepen those connections and relationships. And obviously, that has influence on how I behave in that language.
Yeah, another thing I've seen is one like talking to foreign friends, and you know, I know a lot of people that have started their own businesses in China, and so I know people that they run a business in Chinese, but their Chinese is like good, but not like super high. And one thing I've seen in that kind of situation is that a lot of like boss types, they're like super blunt and they have no idea how blunt they're being. Like, you know, Chinese people are sometimes criticized for not being direct enough. But, you know, conversely, if you're super direct, then you might come across as, you know, a lot worse than you realize. So I've seen that as well.
Yeah. And the funny thing about that, I've been there. Sometimes I feel like I am there, but you know, it's like, I know how to make it real kind of soft and a bit more nuanced of a request in English, but sometimes I lack a little bit of that ability in Chinese.
And so, of course, that's going to affect how people perceive you, might even affect how you perceive yourself.
So this begs the question, is this really like another personality? Are we like, you know, schizophrenic here? We got split personalities in languages? Or is this really just a matter of us just behaving differently?
Well, actually, Jared, let me throw in another piece of evidence from a different angle. So this is something from another study that I read years ago. It's a study by Ingrid Piller called Language Choice in Bilingual Cross-Cultural Interpersonal Communication. All right, listen to this quote. Yeah, listen to this quote. There is evidence that bilinguals say different things in different languages, which makes it quite obvious why intercultural couples stick to the language of their first meeting. They might lose the sense of knowing each other, the sense of connectedness, and the rapport derived from knowing what the other will say in advance if they switched. So I've actually worked with a lot of clients who maybe they have a Chinese significant other and they want to improve their language abilities and then like switch language. But actually in reality, that almost never works or just doesn't even happen that much. And it's because I think of what was discovered in this study. When people first meet in a certain language, they have a certain personality. And when they speak another language, it's like another personality. And that messes with the relationship dynamic if you try to just switch.
That makes a lot of sense. I also came across a scenario that's similar, but it's kind of coming at it from a different angle. There was a lady who won an Oscar for a documentary, as maybe 10, 20 years ago, and it was about the Holocaust, and it was about her experience in surviving that. And so she's German, and she had moved to America after World War II, and it wasn't until she learned English that she was able to really start talking about some of the horrible things that she experienced in some of these concentration camps. And there's been different psychologists have hypothesized simply that because it's a second language for her, English was a second language, that allowed some level of emotional distance to talk about those experiences as opposed to trying to actually talk about them in German. And she wasn't able to really talk about it in German. And so even when she got on stage and received her award and she called out the people who had passed away who didn't make it, you know, and she did tear up, but she later remarked that, you know, I can't hardly even talk about these people in German at all.
Wow, that's interesting.
So there's a whole lot that's going on here, right, when we're learning a different language. And you know, this is something like I think about, John, all the people that I have interviewed for the podcast, you know, over the last 4 years. So many of them, I haven't go back and like listen to all of them, but so many of them have mentioned this, that saying, hey, when I speak Chinese, I feel like I'm a different person. Like I have a different personality.
And so these successful language learners, on the whole, do they see this as an advantage?
I definitely think, okay. Well, that's a good question, John. How can you make this work to your advantage, okay? Is it an advantage or not? Well, I think that depends on what you do with it.
Right. So I mentioned earlier that in the past, I've willed myself into being a more outgoing kind of spontaneous speaker in Chinese. And if you're a little bit introverted, that is something that you can try. And for some reason, it is easier to do in a foreign language than in your native tongue.
Definitely. And I think this is a prime opportunity for, think about, you know, all these situations where if you're an individual, hey, you're really afraid to speak because you really don't want to look like a fool or you're very self-conscious about it. Well, maybe approach this and thinking, well, hey, this is my Chinese persona, right? And this person doesn't really care about, you know, being embarrassed or whatever. And even if I'm embarrassed, my Chinese level isn't going to be high enough to really know I should be embarrassed, right?
Yeah, and it doesn't hurt that Chinese people will almost never laugh at you. They'll always tell you your Chinese is amazing, no matter how good or bad it is, right?
That's right. So I think part of this is just that opportunity to really take advantage of this natural phenomenon and just kind of craft that personality a little bit different that will help you to kind of propel, you know, take better risks, if you will, and more risks in the language in the respect of, you know, getting outside of yourself and really trying to engage in these different situations that are going to give you opportunities to use your language and grow.
And a little tip from my years and years of failure, the humor might take a little while to really get to where you want it.
Yeah, I honestly, John, I think one of the things in that, especially, hey, this is actually a pro tip right here, okay? You're going to go out there, you're going to screw up, right? So you need to probably learn a few statements of self-depreciation, right? Saying like, oh, that sucked, or oh, I made a mistake, or oh, I'm so embarrassed, or whatever like that. Because that actually goes quite a bit away in creating a little bit of humor and glossing over the situation.
Yeah, and Chinese people definitely will appreciate that, just as they will appreciate your efforts at speaking to them in their native tongue.
All right, now it's time for a word from our sponsor. And today our sponsor is
Mandarin Companion Chinese Graded Readers. These are easy to read novels in Chinese.
Today we are talking about The Misadventures of Zhou Haisheng. It's our breakthrough level graded readers using only 150 basic characters.
So this story is super easy to read, and it also has the distinction of being one of our few stories that is broken into parts. So if you're a total beginner and you're really afraid of reading a slightly longer text, well, this one has three parts, and you can actually finish one third of the way through the semi-complete story there.
This follows the adventures of Zhou Haisheng, just like the title. And he's a little boy. His parents own a noodle restaurant there in Shanghai. And his, obviously, misadventures there in the restaurant and doing some deliveries and some other competing restaurant that opens up across the street. It's a lot of fun. It's our first breakthrough level graded reader.
So if you want to be able to read something with only 150 basic characters under your belt, this is a good story to get started with.
Go out and get it today on Amazon, iBooks, Kobo, or wherever you get your ebooks. All right, now it's time for Rants and Raves. John, what do you have for us today? Do you have a rant or do you have a rave?
I have a rant, Jared.
Oh.
In China, there's this tradition. It's fairly new. For certain holidays, they do this thing where they like move the weekends, you know, where you're supposed to have a day off on Saturday and Sunday, they move it into other days and it affects the schedule of schools and some companies. So like you have this situation where like, oh yeah, we have 3 days off next week, but in order to have Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday off, you have to work on Saturday this week and next week. And so as a foreigner, you're just like, what?
Because, yeah, I hate that.
Because we see weekends, you know, having off on weekends is like a God-given right, a human right or whatever. And the Chinese government's like, well, what we have giveth, we can also take away. And they start moving the weekend, you know, vacation around to create like consecutive days off. And so you have like 6 day work weeks, sometimes 7 day work weeks, just so you can have a few consecutive days off. I find it so annoying. And actually, most of my Chinese friends hate it too. So hopefully this particular tradition is going to die out soon.
Yeah, I've never met anyone who likes that. It's like, oh, we're going to give you a day off, but you're going to have to make it up. Yeah, is that really a day off? I don't think so.
Yeah, do not like. All right, Jared, what do you got? Rant or rave?
All right, I got a rave. I got a rave, and I guess there's a little bit some of my recent study methods, and I really have liked doing this. So I one of my other businesses, I do importing and sourcing. So, you know, we help clients here in the States get stuff made or find stuff overseas manufactured. So I'm talking to a lot of Chinese factories, and I don't know why I hadn't done this before, but just like recently, I'm like, hey, wait a second. When I have my session with my tutor, I'm like, I consolidate the chat transcript with like some of the factories I'm talking to, and I send them over, and it's like, all right, let's walk through this and let's analyze my speech. Let's analyze my conversation, what I'm saying, and was I successful in conveying my meaning? You know, was I using the right words, or, oh, had a little grammar problem here, or, oh, this was a little direct, you know, like we were talking about earlier, or whatever. This has been really helpful and insightful because, I mean, obviously it's super practical. This is stuff I'm doing for business. I'm talking to these factories in China, and this has helped me just really improve my Chinese in a very practical, utilitarian sense.
Nice. This is your All Set Learning tutor, right?
That's right. That's right. So we got that twice a week, which is fantastic. And twice a week, an hour each time. So this is really helping me. And I'm getting, obviously, I have practice, you know, talking to these other factories and stuff, you know, messaging over WeChat. It works out pretty well.
Yeah. So focus on the language that you need, the language that you're already using, but you're not sure if you're using it right, right?
Yeah, that's right. And so I think, you know, like other people, you know, like I said, this is a rave. Hey, this is a great technique. So if you are chatting to a friend you've made, you know, in Chinese or whatever like that, and you have a tutor, hey, using these chat transcripts is a great opportunity to learn and grow and improve your Chinese.
Nice. Okay, but Jared, enough about us. There are people writing emails to us and expecting answers. We need to give them answers.
Absolutely. Okay. All right. We have a listener review and a little bit of a question as well from Steve Boritz. And Steve writes, hey guys, discovered your podcast and books a few months ago, and they've both been really helpful in my Chinese studies. I've been on and off again for more than 25 years, but have recently rededicated myself to the language. I figured I need more motivation and decided to make the HSK3 exam a goal. To have that goal keeps me motivated. Of course, I don't want to just pass the exam. I want everything. Ability to read fluently and speak and comprehend and write. So, using a multi-pronged approach, studying for exam, reading, including your books, and some awesome YouTube videos and podcasts. You guys make me laugh a lot. I want to specifically make a call out to Jared's funny and corny jokes at the beginning of each podcast. It's usually just a couple of sentences, but they're so funny. Where do you come up with these? ? Regards, Steven. And he says he's still awaiting level 3.
Okay, see, I thought this wasn't going to be about us, but I was wrong. It's still about Jared.
I'm glad you appreciate the jokes. But corny, come on. You know, okay, fine, we'll take it.
All right, well, thank you for writing. We appreciate the feedback, and Jared will keep being corny for sure.
Corny? No, oh, come on. These are funny.
My name is Taha, and I interpret Chinese Arabic and vice versa.
Taha has an insatiable zest for life that has driven him to pursue his dreams and find growth through stepping outside of his comfort zone. I hope you find his story as inspiring as I did. Stay with us. All right, Taha, here's the big question. Why did you start learning Chinese?
Okay, I started learning Chinese 2017 because I was simply bored with my life. I used to work in a 9-to-5 job back in Libya, back in Tripoli, and I hated absolutely every second of it, and I wanted to do something that's a bit different.
What were you doing?
I was a software engineer, and you might think, oh wow, software engineer, that must be cool. It isn't. It wasn't even my preference. I didn't want to become an engineer. It was sort of something that was forced upon me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like family situations here in Libya. Like, if you're not a doctor or an engineer, you're basically ashamed to your whole family. So you have to be either this or that.
There's some of those influences as well in Asian culture, right?
So. Definitely. So I became an engineer. Awesome. And then I was like, no, that's not what I want to do with my life. It was 2017 when I met this wonderful Chinese guy. We were colleagues, and he told me, like, hey, you love languages. Why don't you go to China and teach English there? I was like, what are you talking about? Is that even a thing? And I was like, yeah, you can just go there, learn the language, and then just see what's up. And if you like China, then China will like you back. I was like, are you for real? I was like, yep, sure. Mm. That was 2017. I sent my resignation letter, packed my things, and left to China like several months after that.
Oh, wow. So you burned the ships. You're like, I'm going.
I'm going. And I didn't even tell my family about my plans until it was really late. Like that moment when I told them, like, hey, after a couple of months, I'm leaving. And they were like, where to? I was like, China. Like, hold up. What is going on?
What was the reaction?
The first reaction was to take me to a psychologist to see if I'm all right in my head. Then once they made sure that I'm all right, that it's just me and not the devil speaking to me, I was okay. And then they start asking me about my reasons why I felt the way I felt. And once I've explained my reasons to them, they sort of understood where I was coming from, but they would still not approve of it and they wouldn't support me because they thought that I had a stable job in Libya, stable income, stable life. But it's this word stable that I hated. I didn't want stable. I wanted messy. I wanted adventurous. I wanted different. I did not want stable. Stable is boring. It's not for me.
Well, if that's what you're looking for, moving to China, well, you can definitely find a lot of that.
Absolutely. I just wanted somewhere that is far from home so that you can sort of rediscover your inner self. And China did offer that to me. So it was end of 2017 when I made that decision. And I was like, first thing to do is like, obviously learn Chinese, right? Like that's what you do when you want to move to China.
Frame this up for me a little bit as well. You speak excellent English. What was your English level at that time? And were you going to teach English?
I had been already a certified English teacher by then.
Oh,
English sort of was always there since day one. So it's never been foreign to me. English has been spoken in my home for as long as I can remember. Like both parents did speak English to us when we were children.
And this is just a personal curiosity. How common is that in Libya?
It's not very common, no. Like most Libyans don't speak a lick of English, but there are like those families who are lucky enough to have supportive parents when it comes to foreign languages. So my parents were really supportive in that regard. So once it was clear to me that I had to go there, I started looking for resources like, what is Chinese? What's in there? What's waiting for me? And that's when I started like reading about the language, reading about what I'm getting myself into, because that's something I usually do before starting a new language. I just read about it. So the first thing that obviously you come across as a Chinese learner is the sheer number of characters that you have to learn. And I was like, really? Like 4,000 or 5,000 before I'm even able to read a sentence? That can't be it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just keep like looking around for resources, like simple resources and things that you can read as a beginner. And that's how I met your mother. That's how I met you guys.
Oh, okay. So you came across Manor Companion at that point. That's pretty cool.
Exactly. Because on your website, it says that you can read books with as little as just 300 characters. Back then, there was just level one. So I had to learn like 300 characters before I started reading, which was amazing. Because I thought to myself, 300 characters is quite a bit, but it's going to be a challenge. And I'm up for that. I want it to be challenged. So what I did was I went on Amazon and I bought the first series, like all of the books that I can get my hands on. And I also bought flashcards. I bought level one, level two, and level three. So in total, there were 100-something characters. And I just could not wait until they arrived in Libya. Because obviously they were available on Amazon US and I had to wait for at least like 3 weeks before they get home.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
Yeah, so what I did, I downloaded the free version of the books. Mm-hmm. I think you guys offered the first chapter.
Yeah.
I printed that out. I kept it by my bedside. Like it was literally just waiting for me every night and I was like looking at it, not understanding a thing. And at that time, I would download some apps like Anki and all of those other apps that would help you remember those characters. And whenever I had a break at work, I would just pull out my phone and go through those characters and going through the first 300 ones to be able to be ready when the books arrive.
I didn't know that this was your approach to learning. Before we even started this interview, I think it's quite interesting. So how did this work out for you then?
Reading in Chinese was definitely more challenging because to be able to read, you had to learn the script, which doesn't exist in Chinese. So you have to learn the characters individually. So that's what got me motivated to start like picking up those characters. I had to get my eyes used to them. I remember like the very first page that I read in Chinese was the first page of The Secret Garden.
Ah, yes.
It took me 45 minutes to finish the first page.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
It took me literally 45 minutes. And do you know what? That day, I texted my friend. I was like, Adib, listen, I read my first page. It took me 45 minutes. And it told me, oh, wow, that's impressive. 45 minutes is something, and congratulated me on doing that. So that meant the world to me. After all of that time, I could finally read a page. It just gave me so much motivation to carry on. I just never looked back from there. I kept on reading a page after the other, and I would write down how much time it took me to finish a page, and you can see the time go down.
Mm-hmm.
I started like with 45 minutes a page, and then a week later, it was 30 minutes.
You know, it's kind of interesting because, you know, there's a lot of ways to approach, you know, that language learning. Usually, we do discourage people from saying, hey, you know, if you don't know any of this stuff, or even if you're like half, you know, read something, find something easier to start with. But I've always kind of wondered, hey, how would it be if someone did start like that? And so it's kind of interesting to hear your story. But it sounds like that was a big accomplishment for you, like saying, oh, I got through first page.
That was incredibly motivating. When I did that, I knew that, hey, there is no going back from here. I just simply had to carry on. I remember I finished the whole book in about 2 weeks' time. And I remember like shouting in my own room. like literally, I shouted, I did it. And thankfully, I bought the whole series. And it took me about a couple months to go through them all. And after I was done with the first series, guess what I did?
What?
I ordered the second level.
Oh, okay. So you went to level two. All right.
I went to level two straight up. I read The Journey to the Center of the Earth. It had two books.
Yeah.
Like there was part one and part two. I took them to work. And I remember like going to the office there and just placing them right on my table. And whenever I had a like 5 minutes break, I would just, you know, go back to my stories and see where I stopped and try to pick up a few more characters from there. So I went through the whole second level, I think, in about June 2018. My flight to China was scheduled in August 2018. So that was about 2 months before.
Oh, so you got through the series before you went off to China?
I did.
Wow, that's amazing. How did your speed progress doing this? Okay, you told me you're like half hour page, the first book. But by the time you got to the end of that last book you went through in level one, what speed were you reading at that point?
I was reading nonstop. I have to admit, it was an obsession at that time. It got me motivated. Like, finally, I was alive again, away from that 9-to-5.
Wow.
I found purpose. Like, hey, I must do this. So it was nonstop. And at that time, not only was I doing reading, I was also doing listening.
Great.
And I tried to find recorded versions of the stories, like the audio files. But I think at that time, there was none. I was like, oh, what should I do now? Like, I really wanted to hear the stories because I drive to work. I drove like 30 minutes. Those 30 minutes like felt wasted. I had to do something in those 30 minutes. So obviously, I found other resources. Like, I was doing audio when I'm commuting to work, 30 minutes in the morning, 30 minutes like in the evening going back home. And I was doing reading around the clock. I think also like the free versions that you provided definitely helped me make that decision because that was exactly what I was looking for. And I know that some of the guys might be hearing this and be thinking, ah, I'm just, you know, sucking up for you guys or whatever. I'm not. Like, those books, guys, are worth it. And coming from where I came from, with all those financial issues, I would still buy all of those series in full. Like, I bought every single book that I could find online from Mandarin Companion. And one of my saddest moments back then was when I asked for level 3 and there was none. I was like, yeah, no, you
still
can't
not
take
yet.
You can't take that away from me. You know, like after, like, you can't take that away from me. Like, I wanted like the level 3 with 750 characters or whatever. I wanted that.
Yeah. The good thing is there are a lot of other good series out there that are higher levels. So, and I'm sure you found some of those, which at this stage, we still refer people. I would say, hey, Imaginate Press, if you've seen those.
Exactly. So I'm not sure if I can mention those books in here, but.
Oh, yeah. But go ahead. We're totally cool to talk about other stuff, okay, competitors, good. Everything. Chinese Breeze.
I was just going to mention Chinese Breeze because they had like level 3 and level 4. And I obviously bought all of them. But that was at that time I was in China. So like August was when I first flew to China. And at that time, I'd just been focusing on listening and reading. So my listening skills was like the start of HSK3, somewhere like that. And reading wise, I finished all of those 1,100 flashcards. So I knew how to identify about 1,000 characters, but I could not put them in a sentence.
Yeah.
Because that's something I just had no exposure to. I didn't speak to anyone, basically. I was just doing reading and listening. I just wanted to survive when I first landed on those Chinese lands. And that's what I did. I signed up for 1 year like Chinese course at the University of Nanhang, Nanjing Hankong Hantian Daxue. The first day of classes, the teachers told us, hey, you can select one of two levels, either like absolute beginners or intermediate. I was like, seriously, beginners? I ain't no beginner.
I'm going to be with the Japanese and Koreans, right?
Yeah, I was literally with the Korean guy.
Yeah.
It was like four Americans, a Korean guy, and someone who was from Sri Lanka, but he'd lived there in China for 11 years at that time.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
you can imagine the stress I was under. And I was like that little guy that came from Libya, not knowing anything, never spoken Chinese in my life. And I was just sitting with them in the classroom. I was like looking around. Oh my God, those guys are so cool. They can read super fast and their pronunciation is on point.
Had you ever practice even like saying the sounds just to yourself or tones or things like that?
I did, because like, remember like those 30 minutes commute to work? I did also Pimsleur.
Okay, yeah.
And Pimsleur would try to drill you to actually say something.
Yeah.
I tried to train my mouth muscles a bit on those weird pronunciation, whatever. It was really hard, like all the gerunds and all that kind of stuff. But obviously I had no real conversation with anyone, like literally zero interaction in Chinese, like spoken interaction. So first class goes by, and I remember the teachers handing us those pieces of paper on which there was this HSK5 text.
Oh no. It's a wall of characters, you know. It's like, ah!
I was like full of character I had never seen in my life. And there was also a bunch of idioms in there. And I was like looking at the piece of text and I was like, what on earth? What is this? It traumatized me to the point that I still remember the title. I think it was called 婚姻这大事, like marriage, this big thing. And to this point, I still have nightmares from that particular day. The teacher would ask us to read. I'm like, read what? What do you mean read? Like, can't you see? Man. Open your eyes. But I took that piece of paper home and I spent the whole evening like just decoding those characters and using Bleiko at the time definitely helped. So I would just write down those characters on Bleiko and it would tell me what they mean and how to pronounce them. It took me 2 days to go through the whole text. And by the end of the week, I would be able to understand what was going on. I wouldn't be able to reproduce the sentences, but at least I understood what the text was about. Obviously, I was the weakest link in the chain for the first couple of months, but that definitely motivated me more than it would motivate others, because I had something to work for. I had something to keep me busy. The others, it was just like another day in the office for them. Some of them, as I said, had been in China for 11 years. Some of them were like for 5 years. So they were used to that stuff. For me, it was something different.
I'm curious to know just a little bit about this motivational aspect for you, because, you know, okay, you said you wanted to come out to China, right? And you wanted something new, something different, you know, a little after the monotony of your previous career, where that was going. And so you get there, but it's also really hard, right? You're talking about some really difficult things. What kind of carried you through some of these really difficult, I'm all soul-crushing times?
I had no idea what I was doing with my life. I guess I was definitely like, I think I was insane in some aspect, like just like what my parents were trying to tell me. Like, because now like, looking back at it, I'd never really thought that I had enough courage to actually do that, to go to a completely foreign country, speaking like basically in code and just being there and trying to survive and trying to like work my way out. So that, Jared, like literally kept me alive. It was challenging to the point that I just could not stop doing it. I had to prove to my parents that I was actually capable of doing more than just 9 to 5. If no one did this before, then I'm going to be the first one who does it. And I'm going to prove them wrong. Because they told me, hey, that what you're doing is unprecedented and it's just insane. You would fail. There is no way that this is going to work out. And those words, they just kept me going. I woke up 6 a.m. every single day. And I never did that. Until now, I don't wake up 6 a.m. I did this in China. From 6 to 7, that was when my roommate was asleep and I could do some reading in peace. So I was motivated to the point that I woke up a whole hour earlier than normal just to be able to do some reading.
Well, I also want to know a little bit about that experience being there, okay? Because you're climbing a mountain every day, getting through this class and everything. But there's also that aspect of culture shock. And we don't talk a lot about that frequently. And I know what it's like for a lot of Westerners, but coming from Libya to China, what was that like, that culture shock?
Let me walk you through it. The first thing that I noticed, like when I first landed in China, it was incredibly hot. So like me coming from North Africa, I thought that, hey, like we had really hot summers. Like we're talking about 45 degrees. Almost every day of June and July, right? So that was the norm.
Northern Sahara, right?
Yeah, it was 45 degrees. I thought that was hot enough. I could survive in China. I landed in there. It was 35 degrees and I could not breathe.
Oh, the humidity.
The humidity killed me. I was like, oh my, what is this?
I know what you mean, yeah.
And like, I flew from Libya to Tunisia, from Tunisia to Germany, and a 12-hour flight from Frankfurt to Nanjing. So it was sort of hour flight. So like when I went there, I was like wearing all this heavy clothes because it was cold in Germany at the time. When I first walked out of the airplane and like I was struck by the heat and the humidity, I almost fainted.
Oh no.
What is that? And then like when I was in the airport, because they didn't really see too many like Libyans coming in. So they interviewed me for about an hour in the airport, asking me all kinds of questions. They also went through my phone just to see if there was anything against whatever they were afraid of.
Yeah.
And then like to share with you guys how challenging it was and how crazy I was, I read a line that it would take me about 300 RMB to get from the airport to the university by Uber, by Didi at the time. I took the freaking metro.
In Nanjing, right?
In Nanjing. I said, I ain't going to be spending no 300 RMBs.
Yeah.
I'm going to spend the 3 RMB, I'm going to take the metro on my first day in Nanjing. I'm just going to read the characters, try to figure out my way, and it took me about an hour to get from the airport to the university. Until today, this is one of the biggest achievements in my whole life, taking the metro on my first day in China. Like, you guys, I did
fantastic.
It.
That's fantastic.
That was the best start possible. I left the metro station, Tui Ping Shan, and I looked left and right, and there was just me, the sun above me, and my bag and my suitcase. I literally looked left and right and said to myself in English, now what? Now what? Where is the university? Like, oh, where am I supposed to be going? I found like a lady that was cleaning the roads, and I showed her the name of the university. She read it. And I tried to explain to her, like, I wanted to go there. And she told me till this day. At that time, I understand what she told me. But now, going back to it, she told me,
Oh, she got an accent there, too.
Tengsu accent. But then, like, she described, like, using her hands, she just, like, straight on and then turned right. The university should be there. And then, like, I saw the name of the university and I was relieved. I'm home.
Oh, man.
I'm home.
Yeah, you made it.
The first struggle was definitely with using the chopsticks, the kwaizha. And I remember it took me 3 weeks to get used to them. And in those 3 weeks, I lost 4 kilograms because I did not know how to use chopsticks.
Oh.
And at the time I was trying to eat, the canteen would just close. Like I was trying to eat my food and they were rushing me out. So I didn't even know how to eat. All that pressure, all this.
I mean, that sounds like a lot of pressure.
A lot of pressure, but that's not the end of the story. A year later, I was 100 kilograms.
Looks like you figured out kwaizha then, right?
It took me 3 weeks to learn that. But once I learned that, there was no going back. I added 30 kilograms in a year.
Oh, wow.
I know that's probably not the healthiest of things. But the Chinese food was weird, but it was also really delicious. Probably weird isn't the right word to use here, but it was unusual for me.
Yeah, it's unique. It was different, right?
It was very different. It was very different. Learning how to read the menus online, they would all be like mian, and there's like mi fan, and all those simple characters. But then you go to the canteen in your local restaurant, and then you would see
a real menu, right?
The real thing.
Yeah, yeah.
A dish would be like 10 characters in one after the other, and be like, what is that? So you'd be trying something new every single day, and that definitely helped me in getting all of those pounds. I'm not proud of that. I'm not saying that this is the way to go about it, but I definitely didn't mind the fact that I was trying something new and I was like learning on the go. Because every time I would eat something new, I would try to remember its name. So next time I would try to use the name instead of just pointing at the menu and saying, "这个那个这个那个," and that takes some time. So I spent about a year at the university going through the classes. And by the end of the second semester, there was this speaking competition for foreigners in Jiangsu province. And no one in the university said that they were willing to participate except me.
Yeah.
I wanted to participate. I wanted to try my luck. Why not?
Yeah. Give it a shot.
I'm a foreigner. I spoke some Chinese at the time. I would say HSK4. So I'll just give it a shot. I reached semifinals.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yep. It was cool. Obviously, like my teachers helped me with the script. And I spent about like 2 to 3 weeks just memorizing my script, like going through it and trying to memorize it. And I think it was Nanjing Jinbo, the golden plates in Nanjing. So I did some research about it for 3 weeks and I went to the competition in there and I got to semifinals. That was my first experience, like being out there.
Amazing though. You made it to the finals and it sounds like you performed well.
And as some sort of a reward, the university in China offered me a 70% discount on any master's course I wanted from the university.
Wow.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So I did my master's as well at the university. Uh-huh. Instead of paying like 30,000 RMB a year, I only had to pay like 10,000.
That's great. And that actually leads to a question I was curious about, because you said that when you told your parents about this, you know, they thought you were crazy, right, and everything, but they said, we're not going to support you. So how did you support yourself while you were out here doing your studies?
I worked for Huawei at the time in Libya.
Oh, okay. Now it makes a little sense, that story, how you had a Chinese coworker. I imagine there's not a lot of Chinese in Libya, right?
I forgot to mention this point. Sorry about that. I used to work for a Chinese company in Libya.
Yeah, okay, all right.
I didn't spend a penny. I just skipped all of my savings. Obviously, I lived with my parents. No shame in that. We all do in Libya. I just took all of my savings and I just went to China, paid everything. And when my friend told me that you can go there and teach English in China, I did TEFL and also did TKT courses in Libya before going in there.
Oh, fantastic.
Second week in China, I was hired. I was working a part-time teacher.
There you go. That's a normal gig there, university student. That's fantastic.
Yeah. I know. And it was actually legal in Jiangsu to do this at the time. I changed my visa from being a student to work study visa.
I guess you were able to support yourself with that too, right?
Yeah, I was making enough to get by and to actually have a quite decent life. I was making about $1,000-something while my accommodation was already paid for. Mm-hmm. So it was just basically my food, and it was more than enough to survive and to have a really, really cool life with them.
Single guy in China, living the local life. I know what you mean. It's great.
Yeah, it was just super, super nice. I also did a bit of traveling also in China as well. I remember like visiting so many different cities just because I wanted to explore. And I remember like during the first week, during the probation period in the school that I was working at. So my schedule was like 6 days a week, I think. But I was like working Saturday and Monday. I was like, that ain't going to work out. I need at least a proper weekend so I can have 2 days in a row where I can go to other cities every now and then and travel. So they actually agreed to change my schedule so I can just go travel around China. I went to Beijing, I went to Shanghai, I went to Suzhou, Hangzhou, and a bunch of other cities. And every city I went to had just so many different adventures. And like I met so many different people and learned so much every time I went out of Nanjing. And just that's what I like the most about China, Jared, the fact that every time you leave your city, go to another province, it feels like traveling to a whole different country.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So you can never have enough of that.
It's a huge, diverse country out there with so many, yeah, it's not a monolithic block by any chance.
It's not. Like food is different, language is different. I think the only thing that was similar is WeChat and the currency. But anything else, it was different.
I've got a question for you. It's on a little bit of a different vein, something I'm curious about. So one thing here that, you know, I've experienced that being in China, I've met a lot of people, a lot of foreigners in China, have helped with a lot of different issues over the years. I've had a lot of people, you know, who are Black who've been on this podcast and sharing their experience. Maybe you could talk about what your experience is, I guess. What do people perceive you as like? What kind of things do you get treated differently than, per se, maybe your white Western friends? What was that experience like for you?
My skin tone was actually quite bright. Libyans are like that. So you can find really white Libyans and really dark ones. It's a whole spectrum of skin color. Mine was sort of on the brightest side. And that obviously attracted Chinese because they treat white as being the only standard of beauty, basically. You're white, you're beautiful. And I was also 182 centimeters tall. And obviously Chinese loved that. So when I was like walking down the streets and I would speak Chinese with the locals, they found that really interesting. So they would just stop me and take pictures with me and ask me where I come from. They were really interested in knowing more about me and why I'm there. So I was always very welcome, to be honest. However, that's not to say people with black skin had the same thing. No, I saw them definitely getting discriminated against, especially on the metro. Like, for example, when I took the metro and I sit down, you bet the seat next to me would be full in a second. They would be rushing to sit next to me and try to approach me and look me in the face and, mama, why we're in, right? They would be really, really interested. However, on the other side, you would see people with darker skin sitting alone and no one is approaching them. So that really made me feel sad. I met a guy from Somalia and he told me that he would only take Didi, like the Uber in China, because he was black. I didn't know that this existed until I met him. I saw what happened, but I didn't realize what was going on until he told me about it. That's not to say that everyone is racist in China. It just depends on the people that you interact with. So basically, everyone has their own version of events. But generally speaking, Chinese would definitely prefer people on the lighter sort of skin color. They have it in their own language. Don't they say, yi bai wei mei, treating white as being beauty. So that's how it is in China.
Gotcha. Well, I'm curious to know, like, what kind of bridges this gap here? You're in China, you're studying Chinese to this point where, hey, now I'm translating Arabic Chinese. I mean, that's quite a big jump there. And so what kind of took you in that direction? And, you know, and how's this all going for you?
Well, what took me in that direction is because I wanted to become the first official certified Arabic Chinese translator interpreter in Libya. At that time, we had none. And obviously, to reach that, you had to obviously speak really good Chinese. So it wasn't just enough to go through those HSK books, because I feel like people misunderstand those levels to a certain point. They think that if you finish HSK 5, then you should be this and that. You know, I went through all these HSK 5, HSK 6 sort of textbooks, but they wouldn't teach you the real thing. They would just teach you the book language. They would just teach you how to pass a test.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't reflect how people speak Chinese in China. It just doesn't do this. It's definitely something that I would do differently now if I go back in time. I wouldn't necessarily like focus on getting the next HSK level. I would focus on understanding TV series.
Mm.
Because that is the real Chinese. That is the real thing. So obviously I did a lot of listening, because again, listening and reading is what makes learning languages more interesting. And not just reading, but reading something that you are personally interested in. So me being interested in languages and language learning, one of my biggest idols is Mr. Steve Kaufman.
Steve, we've had him on the show before.
Pip. And I read his book, The Linguist, and I bought it in Chinese. It took me about a week to go through the whole, and that was like when I felt like, okay, now I'm getting somewhere. Now I can read
yeah,
content.
Wow.
I first worked as an interpreter in Libya about 2 years ago. COVID happened, and at that time, I got COVID in China, and I was really sick. It wasn't called COVID at the time, obviously, it was just called the flu. It was called Feiyan, pneumonia. I didn't know it was COVID, and it took me a whole month to recover.
So this is 2019, you got COVID, and you didn't know it was COVID at the time.
It was just a virus. It was just a Wuhan virus. It was just
the thing. Okay.
It was just pneumonia at the time. I went back to Libya for about 3 weeks. I wanted to go for about 3 weeks. My return flight was scheduled on Valentine's Day. However, those 3 weeks ended up being 3 years. And until now, I still haven't been able to go back to China.
Wow.
So, yeah, it went downhill from there. I had to go through depression. And life was quite dark at the time. COVID happened. I could not leave home. I was like utterly depressed. And I had to figure out life like from scratch again. What am I supposed to do now? My visa expired. My things were in China. And I'm here in Libya like with nothing, basically. In May 2021, a company from Benghazi, a city in eastern part of Libya, called me and asked me if I wanted to interpret for them. They bought a production line, a factory from China, and they wanted someone that could interact with a Chinese engineer, because he didn't speak in English or Arabic, it was just Chinese. And I was like, who, me? Like me? I was like, yeah, a friend of us told us that you speak Chinese, so would he just come here and give it a go? I was like, I'm down. Let's go figure it out. He was someone from Foshan.
Mm-hmm.
So Foshan basically is a city in southern part of China. They speak you can say the furthest, most influenced Mandarin you can ever think of. And it took me like about a week to just decode what the guy was saying.
Oh, really? So he had a really thick accent, huh?
A really, really thick accent. He would change that to za, and sha to sa, and cha to tsa. Everything was different. Even the tones were different. His intonation was different. I've never done this before. It was my first time. And now I have to interpret in front of an audience. It was nerve-wracking. It was really hard to step into that. However, me being who I am, I looked at it from the other side. I was like, hey, listen, this is going to be hard for you now, but you have to keep a notebook nearby and write down those words. You have to get those words down. You have to get used to the way he pronounced things, and you have to accept that this is how it's going to be from here on and just go with it.
Mm-hmm.
With that mindset, I survived the first couple of days, and then I also had to talk to this engineer who was called Yan. I was like, Yan, listen, you need to help me with this because it's my first time. And he told me no problem with that. So before we went to the factory to start like installing the production line, he would tell me about what we were doing, and he would send me documents so I can go through them before the day starts. So then I would have an idea what to expect and all of those technical words that I had to learn before going in there. So he actually played a big role into like helping me and supporting me like get the job done. 3 weeks down the line, the project was done, and I went back to Tripoli where I lived, and it was mission accomplished. I did it.
Wow.
I did it. And now I'm actually talking to you from Benghazi, the same city that I worked 2 years ago as an interpreter at yet another factory. They saw another factory here, and they called me this time. And they were like, hey, you want to interpret for us? I was like, yeah, I'm sold. I'm going.
Well, that's really neat. I mean, there is a contingent of cross business between, I guess, some Libya and China. In this instance, it looks like some installations, machinery, some factory production going on there.
It's opening up. Libya is slowly recovering, and Chinese influence could be felt slowly throughout Libya and throughout the whole continent. So you know that China is like doing all kinds of projects in almost all countries in Africa, including Libya. So Chinese presence is felt more and more these days than, say, 10 years ago. So definitely the need for Chinese interpreters is getting higher. And the fact that there isn't that many people that speak Chinese in Libya make it easier for me to find those jobs, and they pay really well. A day working as a Chinese interpreter would be about working 10 days in like somewhere else. And for me at this point, it's not even work, it's pleasure. It's just me doing my hobby. So it feels like cheating. It feels like I'm cheating life.
Yeah.
Right? Like, guys, do you have any idea how much I'm enjoying this? And you guys are paying for me and covering my hotel expenses? You guys must be insane. Yeah. I would literally do it for free, and they pay me top dollar for it. I'll take it.
That's amazing.
I'll take it.
Sounds like a great opportunity. Well, Taha, I'm curious to know, like, you've gone through a lot to learn Chinese, some difficult times, some good times, and everything in between. What advice would you give to someone who's thinking about learning Chinese or studying Chinese right now?
Just do it. Just do it. The thing that I regret, Jared, the most is that I started late. Just to put it out there. If you're trying to learn Chinese, first of all, you need to have a reason why you want to do this. Because that reason is what's going to motivate you throughout the way. And it's going to be a long process. And you need to accept the fact that it is going to take you years. Reaching like perfect Chinese is something that you should not be focused on or concerned with, because that doesn't exist. Because people, I feel like when they go to YouTube and they find all those clickbaity videos, foreigners speaking fluent and perfect Mandarin Chinese or whatever, that's misleading. Nobody ever speaks like 100% accurate Chinese. Not even Chinese people themselves. Nobody even knows all of these characters in the textbook. But it does that. Ain't nobody got time for that. That should not be the target. The target is to be able to reach fluency. And fluency is an umbrella term. There are so many different approaches to learning Chinese, so you have to find the way that matches you. And probably asking someone who went through the process before could definitely help you. Because it's so easy to fall into those rabbit holes while learning the language. It's easy to learn things the wrong way. Because people say that, hey, as long as you understood, then it's okay to ignore the tones. No, it isn't. Tones are a big part of the language. Yep. And if you don't want to sound like a jerk pronouncing those words, you must get those tones down. Chinese people would not be judging you if you mispronounce a word. But to me, you should focus on getting the pronunciation right, understanding why tones are important, and accepting the fact that this is how it is. Chinese will always have characters, will always have tones. So don't fight it, go with it. Enjoy it. Chinese characters are difficult. No, they aren't. They are stories. And once you look at it from that perspective, that every character is a story, and every story is interesting, then you are on the right track. Don't fight it. Accept it and learn to live with it. Definitely accept it. It's never going to change. You have to change, though.
Words of wisdom. Well, Taha, I really appreciate you taking the time to share your story and experience with us. It's been really fascinating.
It's an absolute pleasure, Jared. It's an absolute pleasure to be a guest for this podcast. It's something that I listened to like on my journey, and now I'm a part of it. It just feels like a dream come true. So thank you so much for inviting me, and thank you for giving me the time to share with you guys my journey with this beautiful language. It's just phenomenal. Just, guys, you got to give it a try.
It's come full circle. Awesome. Well, thanks, Taha. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jared. Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone.
You have been listening to the You Can Learn Chinese podcast. Help us spread the word by sharing this with your friends, classmates, teachers, cousins, captain, assistant, makeup artist, coach, mascot, seamstress, and that one gal named Juliet. Please subscribe to our podcast and share it with a friend. And if you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review. You can also reach out to us at mannercompanion.com or mannercompanion on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or TikTok. Apologies to John Cena, we just ran out of time. The You Can Learn Chinese podcast is produced by myself, Jared Turner, and our editor is Kaiser Guo, and interview editor is Dominic Edgley. And I'd like to thank our special guest, Taha Schlivik. And of course, thanks to my co-host, the man, the myth, the legend, John Pasden. See you next time.